It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Good morning, Phil.
Yeah, good morning, Tess. Where's that Mikey? Is he on holiday again?
No, he's actually a sick chook in bed today,
If you're listening, Mikey, get well soon, mate.
Oh, that's nice. Now, you were just saying you're feeling a bit tired after the first homelessness count last night.
Yeah. I sort of got home about 12:30 this morning, and the alarm went off as usual at 5:00, and then somebody from the media rang me at 5:15. So didn't wake me up. I was in the shower, but woke my wife up. She was not happy with me. It was an interesting exercise. I was out in Mangere town centre, which is not a particularly an area renowned for homelessness. But we came across three people within the town centre there, one sleeping in a doorway, one sleeping close to a fast food outlet, and the other sleeping in a car. And you've just got to think, what a miserable existence being out there. You know, most of us just take the things that we take for granted, having a shower, being able to make yourself a cup of tea, have breakfast, etc. These people kind of live from day to day. They have problems other than homelessness, obviously, that probably leads to their situation. It might be mental health, it might be addiction, it might be family breakups. But, I think... I don't know what the numbers over the region will be yet, but it's important that we've got some information about that. We're, on one hand, are making some progress towards dealing with the problem, I think, through Housing First, where we focus on housing people and then putting a wraparound service to deal with the causes of their homelessness. Probably, I think it's 582 people that we have housed in the first 15 months, which is great. And hopefully we're making some progress, you know, with more social housing, with the government state house program, more affordable housing, more housing consents being issued. Hopefully we can make some progress, because none of us want to see a city where, you know, people are living out on the street, suffering the insecurity, suffering the illness that, you know, you get if you're sleeping rough during winter, you'll end up in hospital. In fact, actually, one of the guys I spoke to out there, I said, you know, do you feel safe on the street? Oh, yeah, he said. And then he proceeded to tell me he'd just come out of hospital because he'd been stabbed by somebody else out on the streets. And I thought, you feel safe? You know, this is a problem that I think Aucklanders want us to get on top of for humane reasons, and so that we, you know, we can make a better claim to being a world-class city, and none of us feel good about having people sleeping rough.
So going forwards with this data that was collected, and it's from about 900 volunteers who were out there last night over 3 hours, how quickly can we see some of this data put into something to help these people, do you think?
The people that are doing it, well... The council funded the count last night, but we're not organising. It's being organised by a collective that council works very closely with called Housing First. They'll have data to us, which we will probably announce around October the 10th. And obviously we're sharing that data with the government. It's the first time we've done a survey. It was kind of ambitious, 5,000 square kilometres of Auckland, trying to cover that. And we're not pretending that we found everybody that was homeless. You know, there'll be people, and we worked on a very narrow definition of homelessness. It was people sleeping rough and sleeping in cars. If you look at the wider definition, you know, people doubled up in houses, people sleeping in garages, the figure is obviously many times that level. But we deliberately focused on people at the hardest end of homelessness. So we'll share that data with government, and then we'll judge what we're doing and what we might need to do in order to cope with the scale and the nature of the problem that the analysis shows.
Okay, cool. And it's been about a month since the fuel tax kicked in, and it's been about $13 million in the first month. So where are people seeing that money go towards?
The first priority we've actually put into road safety, because that's the thing that we can deal with most quickly. And why road safety? Because in the last 4 years there's been a 78% increase in people killed on the roads in Auckland. So last year, 64 people killed. And the rate of increase is not just because we've got more cars on the road. It's actually five times the rest of New Zealand. So, you know, and that's just the people killed. You're also talking about huge numbers of people that are seriously injured. And the cost of that in human terms and in social and economic terms is huge. Mm-hmm. So what I've seen out there already in the rural roads where there's a disproportionate level of accidents, work happening and better signposting of corners, of the markers down the side of the road. There's going to be changes in the black spot intersections. We're putting more emphasis on people that are running red lights. Mm. You know, we know that causes deaths and injuries. Why the hell would you drive through a red light when somebody coming through the other way has got a green light and feels that they can safely proceed through it, only to be collected by somebody that's in a hurry to get somewhere and ignores what the red light is telling them. So that'll be a first step. Public transport, bringing forward the eastern busway plans. I mean, the east of Auckland's been growing fast and it's probably the worst served by public transport. Mm. There's a whole range of programs, but inevitably, between collecting the money and putting in place the major infrastructure works, there's a time lag because you've got to organise contracts and you've got to get the work built. But this is on track to raise about the level of money we expected. Every dollar that we spend as Aucklanders on our fuel tax, the government matches with at least another dollar. So, you know, actually, over 10 years, there'll be another $4.3 billion going into our transport network. Without the regional fuel tax, probably we'd just be renewing roads and finishing existing contracts. So this is critical to matching the population growth of Auckland and investing in our infrastructure.
And there have been questions raised about whether these fuel companies are passing on the cost of the tax and just Auckland and road safety and public transport in Auckland, or if it's being spread across the entire of the North Island or other regions?
Well, they're certainly passing it on to Aucklanders, and every one of us that goes near a fuel pump knows that you're paying the 11.5 extra cents a litre. The costs have gone up much more than that because of the dollar going down, 20% lower than it was 4 years ago. So that goes straight onto our fuel bill, and so too does the international price of oil, and that's gone up. Now, the problem with the dollar going down and the price of oil, the bulk price of oil going up, is that we see nothing for it. That money just disappears. Are the fuel companies exploiting their situation? I think the Commerce Commission and the government have got to keep a close eye on that. I think most of us as consumers have a bit of a suspicion that when the international price of oil goes up and the dollar goes down, it's passed on immediately to consumers. And when the dollar goes up and the price of oil internationally goes down, there may be a bit of a lag before it's passed on. And that lag, you know, vastly increases the profit of the company. So the Commerce Commission and the government need to keep a close eye on that. I don't see any evidence that they're spreading it to other parts of the country. But the truth is, in the South Island, before and since the fuel tax, they were paying much more for their petrol. You know, even though they don't have a regional fuel tax, they're still, in many cases, paying more than us, and that may be distributional costs from the oil companies.
So could we see some of that money that's being picked up on the fuel tax going towards what you've suggested of free tram travel on Queen Street?
Ultimately, yeah. Mm. I mean, that idea is simply an idea I got from being in Melbourne, and anyone that's listening to the program that's been in Melbourne knows that Melbourne was smarter than Auckland. It didn't pull up its tram tracks. It kept them there. And in the centre of Melbourne, you travel free, and then when you get to the edge of the CBD, then you start paying fares. And I don't know who'll be running light rail yet. It might be a public-private partnership. But I would hope that they would at least consider the option of, you know, if you're only doing two stops in Queen Street, whether that could be a free service. Now, you know, I don't determine that. The company that will be running the trams determines it. But I hope they look at the Melbourne model that seems to work quite well. So, you know, my view is if you could do that and it works out to be economically viable to do that, that's an encouragement for more people to use the trams. And what I'd really like to see is Queen Street, with the tram going up it, but a shared space so that we're actually effectively pedestrianising it in the same way that we have in Fort Street or Elliot Street. And, you know, it's really great now as a pedestrian to walk down those streets. Yeah, there are cars that still can go through there at a snail's pace, but you don't have the heavy traffic. And you take a street like, you know, High Street, and you see the volume of traffic on that, and we're all crammed onto the footpath. The number of pedestrians in Queen Street have doubled in 3 years. So, you know, let's make Queen Street a destination rather than a through road for cars.
Do you think that instead of creating a free tram transport up and down Queen Street, it would be better off putting that money towards subsidising public transport?
Well, I think you've got to weigh up those sort of things, and all I'm asking is that whoever runs the light rail up Queen Street, that they look at all of the options, and, you know, yeah, the thing's got to, they've got to cover, you know, the government subsidises public transport, and that's appropriate, but we've got to get some return on public transport. But I you know, from my experience in Melbourne, I thought, hey, that seems to work well in that city. That's how they run it. They seem to be able to do it profitably in Melbourne. Let whoever's going to run it, they should take a look at that model and see if it's viable here.
Cool. Well, thanks for chatting to me this morning, Phil. I know it wasn't your normal catch up with Mikey, but
it's always good to talk to you, Seth. And, you know, we'll be thinking about Mikey and hoping that he's making a quick recovery.
I'm sure he will be. We'll catch up with you next week.
Okay, right, thanks, Seth. Bye.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.